So first thing I'll say is that they will be focusing on impermanence while that opportunity. And after lunch, there will be the impermanence of our formal silence. All things come and go. And it's just good to be a bit mindful about that transition. Different things can happen. The kleshas arise, for example. You know, being attached to the silence, wanting to hold on to it, having aversion to people talking. Different mental states arising based on the conditions changing. Everything's unfolding, right? So just aware with kindness in that transition. And also, I think sometimes people, they have a bit of a binge after being silent. So they kind of overdo it. Yeah, and then just feel sick from it. Yeah, they feel really sick from it. By the time they get to dinner, you know, we have this, from between lunch and dinner, just... Or by the time we get to the afternoon meditation, you're just, thank God the external environment is making me be silent. There's no right or wrong about how we react and what happens from this change, but just to maintain mindfulness through that. One of the Satipatthana says, while talking or when silent, one is mindful. Yes, so in the bardo in between, one is also mindful. Also, I've been saying how this way of working is a little different than being so focused on getting into dhyana. You remember early on, we had a sit where we did the Vajrapani mantra quite vigorously towards the end when you might have been happily blissing out in your silent space. You know, you might have also been glad for it because you were being tortured by incessant thoughts. But whatever, if you were blissing out, the Vajrapani mantra came crashing in. So what we're doing is not a protective practice, actually, in the sense of preciousness, trying to create a walled-off space, building this walled-off meditation space that we're protecting from life. The work we've been trying to do is using certain conditions that are beneficial, so the silence, the meditation is beneficial, but the point of that is to be able to enter more deeply into life. To be able to enter more deeply into life, yeah? As it is, with its creaking chairs, its slamming doors, you know, and this is just part of, the breaking of silence is part of a gradual transition to, well, we've seen how we can't even control our own thoughts, right? So there's a whole world out there, which is operating on that same principle, that we can't control it all. Today, that's the part we want to focus on and really learn about. Hopefully that's been coming through. When you do this work, you might naturally tend to find that you're wanting to meditate with your eyes open. And that's another way to create a kind of transparency, outer and inner. It's not so much a sense withdrawal form. There are forms of meditation which are more sense withdrawal. In a way, when we close our eyes, it might be beneficial because there's so much going on, and let's say we're trying to identify a Vedana. Well, maybe slowing things down a little bit, not taking in more input, helps us find a Vedana somewhere in there so we can learn how to find Vedana. But you might have found it's more during the walking or during meals or something that your mind and what it gets up to is a little bit more obvious. You could carry that work into those just daily life missions. I was thinking about my burning the loo paper example, and I said, that's not a very nice job. Well, burning the loo paper, depending on your mind state, could be a very nice job, so you could be noticing your mind during that, right? Burning away the defilements. So all of this can be very interesting. All of what happens to you, well, actually, you know, from now onwards until the attainment of enlightenment, and even after the attainment of enlightenment, it could all be something we're engaged with and alive with and aware with. Manifesting to us through the four foundations of mindfulness. That's how we contact life. We've been doing it quite directly with what's happening in our bodies, in our feelings, in our minds. But mind is also how we come in contact with the whole world. So it's the same four foundations in the world of activity as in a more secluded environment. Continuous practice the rest of your life. Yeah? Continuous practice on a 10-day retreat is an opportunity, and it's an opportunity for the rest of your life. And as Dogen said, when we sincerely practice, even though we are, in the small mind, completely confused, if we're sincere and just show up for life, then that Buddha nature can manifest in any activity, just through that sincerity of showing up for life. I don't really feel like saying anything else. And what we're really doing here, which I think is very important, and I think it's an area I'd like to develop in our whole way of meditating, is we're finding our experiential way into the Dharma, right? So a lot of us have studied the Dharma, And we're taking something like the five skandhas, or the Heart Sutra, which you've heard so many times, and we're actually directly exploring it through meditation. What I call finding meditative equivalents for the Dharma. And the Dharma is just an expression of reality as it is. It's not a fabrication either. I've been talking about non-fabricated experience. Well, the Dharma is not a fabricated philosophy or teaching or, you know, or framework. It's just reality as it is. It's just a finger pointing at the moon. The words don't really capture and can't capture this thusness. That's the best word they've come up with, it seems like, thusness. Not even telling you what it is. It just says, this thusness is what is when we release our ego grasping. That's the best description I think we have. So it's great because it's like what we've been doing here. It's not telling you what it is. It says, what is there? It's an invitation, yeah? The Dharma is a personal invitation. What's there? So I'll just read you 13 through 16. Hopefully you've memorized 1 through 12. Okay. Actually, I'll just remind us of the mind touch rad, which we did yesterday. Sensitive to the mind, I breathe in. Sensitive to the mind, I breathe out. Gladdening the mind, I breathe in. Gladdening the mind, I breathe out. Steadying the mind, I breathe in. Steadying the mind, I breathe out. Liberating the mind, I breathe in. Liberating the mind, I breathe out. Focusing on impermanence, I breathe in. Focusing on impermanence, I breathe out. Focusing on fading away, I breathe in. Focusing on fading away, I breathe out. Focusing on cessation, I breathe in. Focusing on cessation, I breathe out. Focusing on relinquishment, I breathe in. Focusing on relinquishment, I breathe out. Phew! We've already been doing this, I think. Well, it's been happening. The impermanence part has been happening, right? We don't create it. It's not like we're going to now. Now we're going to go make everything impermanent this morning. So I want you to run around with the Vajra chopper and don't hurt anyone. So we're just focusing on that, which is part of everything. So I'll just very quickly touch on some of the ways we might have noticed this, but hopefully we're mapping back to your own experience. These aren't theoretical, okay? So impermanence, most basically anicca. It's just everything's changing. Everything arises and passes away. In the very in-breath are the conditions for the out-breath. Just in breathing in, we've already have the conditions for the fading away of an out-breath. Sometimes from the small self, we get anxious about the loss part, yeah? And there is that loss part. I think it's kind of, it's just part of the human situation. So there is loss. There's worldly winds, gain and loss. We will be parted from those we have affection for. You will also be parted from those that are driving you nuts. Of course, you want them to go before you, but we have no guarantee what order it will be. So we've hopefully been able to touch into dukkha, the trying to control everything, or just trying to find our contentment and just being invested in this world that's just coming and going, and piti in one meditation, no piti in the next. The dukkha, the suffering of that, trying to find meaning and happiness in that level. Jamaica Kincaid, an author from the Caribbean, said something I really love. Someone asked her why in her short stories they seem to have such sad endings, you know, all the time. And she said, I'm not interested in the pursuit of happiness. I'm interested in the pursuit of truth. Isn't that great? Oh yeah, I read that. I got chills hearing that from her. So if we look at the glass half empty, or if we're just stuck in this level of ego grasping, then we're just buffeted by the ups and downs. And we've already explored that, yeah. Something upekkha, more stable, that experiences life and its richness, but also there's a deep, wise stability with all that. And hopefully you've had a moment, a flashing moment, maybe that's given you a sense of the possibility of that. If not, stay with things as they are, and it will happen. In his seminar on the Bodhicharyavatara, Sangharakshita has this little bit that's really great, which is really about paticcasamuppada. It's about setting in place conditions. He says, your practice is working. When you're practicing, you're headed towards enlightenment. Yeah, you don't need to be so worried about it. Something is happening. So it's the other side of it, is impermanence is linked to this whole flow of things arising and falling in dependence on each other, mutually influencing each other, interconnected. You are not the same person that was sitting in this room the first evening of the retreat, and maybe you had a sense of that. Maybe you had a sense of not being the same person breath by breath. Everything that's happened has mingled with the process I call me, the process of perception, the process of vedana, the process of being embodied, the process of acting, having consciousness. All this unfolding has mingled with awareness, with the breath, with the sunshine, with the rain, with lentil pate. Actually, for me, it did not intermingle with lentil pate, except for that moment of thinking, I'm not going to have that. Yeah? So you're just not the same person. And so impermanence has this other implication that we can change. It's actually, when we're railing against it, it's horrible. And when we relax into it, we find the meaning of this human life. So again, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be confirmed by 10,000 things. Wow, love that. To study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be confirmed by 10,000 things, which is everything. So we talked about being maybe alienated and needing to work on that. Yeah, so to be able to come into our experience. And then by doing that, we just lose ourselves. But it's not through pushing ourselves away. What does it mean to lose ourselves? It means to actually be confirmed by everything. So we find ourselves in this richer, deeper way, much more meaningful, much more authentic, actually satisfying. It's all poems this morning. I don't feel like saying anything. How about this one? These are all my favorite poems. I'm just sharing with you all my favorites. We're having a little dip. It's a mood I hope we evoke, and then we can go rest in that space. A single path among 10,000 trees, a misty valley hidden among 1,000 peaks. Not yet autumn, but already leaves are falling. Not much rain, but still the rocks grow dark. With my basket, I hunt for mushrooms. With my bucket, I draw pure spring water. Unless you got lost on purpose, you would never get this far. So we talked about being lost with no awareness, but there's being lost on purpose. So no fixed self. From the ego grasping, small mind standpoint, it sounds awful. And when we just go deeply into that, liberating the mind, liberating everything, it's got that sense of natural intelligence, natural authenticity. Oh yeah, there's no fixed self. I don't have to keep exhausting myself trying to create one. Doesn't mean there's nothing there. So we just ask you, well, what's there? There's no fixed self, then what is it to be human then? And we have the Bodhisattva of compassion when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all 5 skandhas and sundered the bonds that caused him suffering. So, related, maybe you've touched into this. After doing my first kind of long Anapanasati retreat with other people, so we got to recite the Heart Sutra, you know, so it's great having that support of it just being recited. I had a little panic, because all of a sudden, without, I wasn't even thinking at all, anything in particular, and then we were reciting the Heart Sutra, I was just kind of released into it, not using the thinking, analytical mind, and all of a sudden I realized it was making sense, and that really worried me. I did have this, it concerned me. So if this breath is just coming and going, and this thought just coming and going, I'm not even thinking. Some of them I take credit for. I don't even know if that's really valid, but not even thinking a whole bunch of them. There's thought, but I'm not thinking. Just like there can be sound. We can hear sound without having to listen. So this life is unfolding, and there's no self controlling it all. When it all opens up in the meditation, Who's meditating? In between thoughts, who are you? Who are you now in that space? When I yell pat at you, or when you sneeze the other moment, and there's that space afterwards, well, who are you then? Okay, so that's focusing on impermanence. So it's quite full in a way. It's the deeper nature of what's happening, which we don't create or impose on our experience. We just do the work we've been doing, and we're sensitive to this reality as it is, thusness. If we stop interfering with the ego-grasping mind, what's that thusness? Okay, so I'll just read you one more poem, and then I'll say probably two sentences about 14, 15, and 16. Two sentences each, I'm afraid. I love the title of this poem. It's another one of these Chinese monks. And I think it's a good example of this paticca-samuppada, seeing it in this practice in a very non-intellectual way. So sometimes we read about that, and it just seems very heady. But in this practice, through noticing a breath, and then noticing the body change, and noticing awareness, how it affects our experience. Just by noticing what is, we can begin to awaken to paticca-samuppada, the slamming door, how that affects. It's all part of this process, very non-theoretical. And actually, what's interesting is, on retreats for people preparing for ordination, there's a theme on paticca-samuppada. And in North America, Sona just did a whole retreat using the Anapanasati, so he dropped all the study, and they just did Anapanasati. So this poem is called, oh, before I tell you what it's called, there's an expression in here that says calming of the heart, and it's in quotes, so it's the name of a meditation practice this person is doing, okay, calming of the heart. So it's called Abode of the Unplanned Effect. Abode of the Unplanned Effect. The grass-covered path is secluded and still. A closed door faces the Chengnan Mountains. In the evening, the air is chilly, but the light rain stops. At dawn, far off, a few cicadas start. Leaves fall where no green earth remains. A person at his ease wears a plain white robe. With simplicity and plainness, his original nature still, what need to practice calming of the heart? So we just show up for the practice. We just show up for life, aware of what's happening, and then it will have an effect. And we can't will that. We don't need to will it. The abode of the unplanned effect. So overall in this practice, showing up and learning from life what conduces to liberation, what conduces to suffering, and letting your natural intelligence emerge and live itself out. Okay, so 14th contemplation, focusing on fading away, viraga. Fading away. What's fading away? Attachment is fading away. It's nice, it's fading away. Very particular, viraga, fading away. It's not being forcefully severed, violently severed. That natural intelligence of experiencing what it's like to have rope burn again and again, as many times as we do it, there's a natural release. Yeah. The 15th contemplation. Focusing on cessation, I breathe in and breathe out. Nirodha, this features in the Heart Sutra. Nirodha, literally, it's the unbinding of the mind. Also, traditionally, it's talked about the quenching of a fire. See that fire sermon, if you know the fire sermon, everything's burning with the kleshas. So, quenching of a fire. Unbinding the mind from greed, hatred, and delusion. No longer getting lost in grasping onto things as me or mine. So isn't it great being around someone that's just spacious and lets you be as you are, that doesn't try to fix you? Isn't that so nourishing? So this is, get a flavor for that way of being, yeah. Isn't it great when you just let yourself be like that? Yeah, that's the flavor. Cessation of the act of grasping, of clinging on. That gives rise to suffering. So yeah, then along with it, suffering is calming, cooling. So again, the way these are worded is really interesting because they're not worded in terms of outside of us. It's really interesting. They're worded from our way of being. I love that about the sutta. So just like it wasn't like you have to get to dhyana, you don't have to get to some state. It's the process of letting things fade away, the process of letting that stilling happen. And then there's the last one, focusing on relinquishment. I breathe in, focusing on relinquishment, I breathe out. Pati nisaga. This literally means to give back. I don't know if I can. Pati nisaga. Giving everything back. Everything back to where it came from. Everything arises out of emptiness. It is emptiness. It returns to emptiness. We give it back. Dogen again says, take the backward step. So going back into original nature, aboriginal mind, Buddha within. Okay, so 14th is just starting to fade away. And the 15th, it stopped all that. For a moment, maybe, when we're enlightened, it stopped. All the clinging on. So at first, the clinging on is just relaxing. The 14th contemplation is fading away. In the 15th, it stopped. And the 16th, even the subtle sense of a self, even a sense of practicing the Anapanasati, we give it all back. So it's just a deepening, yeah, of a process. Now, this describes becoming fully and completely enlightened, but we have flashes. I think we can have a taste of enlightenment. And practice is then relaxing into those moments, so we become friendly with them. We don't contract back from them. And if they're like a flash of lightning, you could think of it as more and more flashes until there's just one completely illuminated sky. Yeah, that's one way we could think of what's happening. Just as we spend so much time getting very close to small mind, we're getting intimate with that spacious big mind, non-grasping. That's it, folks.